Let's suppose that you were able every night to dream any dream you wanted to dream. And you would naturally, as you began on this adventure of dreams, you would fulfill all your wishes. You would have every kind of pleasure, you see. And after several nights, you would say, well, that was pretty great. But now let's have a surprise. Let's have a dream which isn't under control. Well, something is going to happen to me that I don't know what it's going to be. Then you would get more and more adventurous, and you would make further and further out gambles as to what you would dream. And finally, you would dream where you are now.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Bindle Boys Podcast. This week, Kyle and I sat down and talked about life coaching, as we are both taking a life coaching Udemy course, and we also talked about the framework for how entrepreneurs succeed or fail, among other topics along the way. Sorry that we haven't been posting podcasts a lot. I know that we were definitely on a good roll back a couple months ago, but nevertheless, this is episode 9. We're very close to that 10 episode mark, which would be huge for us. And yeah, so without further ado, we'll get right into things. Please be sure to check out the Udemy course that we are taking if you're interested. It's only $10 on Udemy, and we'll leave the link somewhere in the description and when we post this online as well. We actually just got new clothes coming in today, which is a Tuesday that we're posting this. And so there will be new clothes up on the website within this week. I know we've been saying that for over a month. We finally actually got the order in. We actually got the things made. I have confirmation of all of this. So I'm excited to say that we will finally be doing something with the clothes. And that's exciting for us. So look out for that. Also, one last announcement. We are vending at Helifest up in Jackman, Maine, which I'm pretty sure you can still buy tickets for. If you're in New York, say Syracuse area, it's about an 8.5 hour drive, which is pretty far, but I think it'll be worth it. It's a cool, quaint little music festival. Got a decent amount of bands going there. Should be some good vendors as well, so check that out. Also, up at Snow Ridge up in Torin, New York, my friends from skiing and stuff like that in Central New York have put together a music festival called A Lovely Time. You can find them also on Instagram at A Lovely Time, and they're putting on another awesome festival. There's about 22 plus bands there. It's going to be a mini ramp for skateboarding, blading, all that kind of stuff, BMX. So definitely check that out as well. I think it's about $50 for a ticket for the weekend. It's a Friday and Saturday in July. So go check that out and go check out Helifest as well. Both of them are in July. Very excited to get to vend at both of them and meet a lot of new people. Don't forget to follow us at boho_hobo_ and bohohobovegan for Instagram and Twitter, and bohohobo for YouTube. We really would like to see comments, likes, suggestions, anything like that. The more engagement, the better the community will be. Please get engaged, guys. We've been trying to post as many videos and podcasts and other content as possible to keep you guys engaged with what we're doing, and we would love to have more people trying to get involved in everything we're doing. So please don't hesitate to message us and figure out how you can get involved with Boho Hobo Lifestyle today and make this community what we intended it to be in the first place. It would be really great, and we look forward to anyone who's interested in trying to get involved with us. Thanks for listening again, guys, and without further ado, Bindle Boys Podcast.
So what do you learn about the life coaching course right now?
So, you know, I just went through like the very beginning of it, but I got some good stuff out of it. It was weird because a lot of the stuff he was talking about was making me reflect on relationships with people, because I've never spent time trying to actually help people through stuff too often. Like, people don't just come to me because they're looking for help with their life. So I was trying to find other ways that I've, like, applied, I could apply some of these thinking.
Currently, you're saying? If you were to go out and, like, help other people, how would you go about doing it?
Well, I'm saying, like, how I have gone about it, if I have ever been in that situation. And whether it was someone asking me to help them, like, trying to, like, look for it. I know it's not about giving advice or whatever, but someone who's clearly looking for help with whatever they're doing and they seem like they haven't found a person that is helpful with them. To bring it back full circle to, like, the original beliefs, core beliefs, is that no one is broken, so the thought in my head that I need to fix someone is flawed, because no one's broken. So if they aren't willing to take that first step forward to, like, make their life better, you shouldn't waste your time helping them do anything until they make the conscious decision and choice to do something about their situation.
I think people are broken, but it's the matter of fact that we can't be the ones to fix them if they are broken. They have to take it upon themselves and be responsible to fixing themselves. I think that's what he was trying to get at.
But no one's broken.
Was he saying that in the video?
That's a core belief. No one's broken.
Oh, I don't remember that video.
It's like one of the very early ones.
Yeah, I probably forgot about it. But, like, thinking back to that situation, subjectively, like, what I just said, I kind of believe what I'm saying to be true, more so true, that, like, people can be broken, but the only one that can fix them is themselves.
I wouldn't say someone's broken, per se. I think that they're set back.
Like, suppressed from their potential?
Yeah, there's, like, something blocking them, and they haven't yet figured out how to move around the object, whatever it is, whatever is impeding them from moving forward. And a lot of that has to do with just your mindset and how you think, how you're, like, approaching whatever challenges are affecting you and putting you in that rut. And so I feel like if you're saying someone's broken, that means that they're not able to get past anything because they need someone else to fix them in order for them to get past that. He was saying. If something's broken, that implies that something else needs to fix what's broken. Like, the thing itself can't fix itself.
So I guess I'm coming at it in a different angle, but what he's saying, what I'm saying, kind of lead to the same path. At the end of the day, people have to fix it.
They have to make the
conscious
decision. It's not about the other person fixing them.
More guidance at that point.
But you can't guide someone who's not willing to
be guided.
Yeah, exactly. Like he was saying with that dude, he was open to the new information and he was appreciative of it.
Oh, he wasn't almost guided.
Yeah, but he wasn't receptive at all. He wasn't actually learning anything. So everything that he was being taught, he wasn't actually doing anything about it. So that's why just nothing was happening. And he was like, I feel like I'm bad at life coaching because this guy's not changing. And he was like, maybe it's not that you're bad at whatever. Maybe you're just spending your time on someone who's not willing to learn.
Right, right. And you're just churning your wheels, spinning your wheels.
And it was really funny because his mentor, like, told him a quote from Star Wars.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It was a quote from Yoda that there is no try. There is either you either do or you don't. There's no trying. So he was like, with that person, he was saying, like, I'm trying to do all these things. I'm really trying hard to, like, help him change. You can't try. You either are helping him or you're not. And clearly in that situation, he wasn't helping. So he's like, you need to spend less time teaching the Chris's of the world and spend more time teaching the Kane's of the world in that situation. So that applies to anyone else. If you come across someone that's not worth your time, spend less time with those kind of people and more time with people like yourself that want to make an active change in their life.
Yeah.
which was cool. I was like, wow, okay. So the next time that comes around, I'm going to be thinking, when someone's looking for advice about something or help or whatever, how are they receiving what you're telling them? Are they just looking for validation and stuff like that? Because then if they're looking for that, they're not actually receiving what you're saying. They're just looking for someone to tell them what they want to hear. But you want someone who actually will sit and be open to what you have to say and think about what you're saying and then be like, maybe what they said is actually true. Let's make some change. Yeah. But it sounds like with life coaching, you do it in a way that it makes that person feel like they came up with it themselves. In a way. Cool. You, like, guide them to that conclusion. Mm-hmm. That maybe this
I think it's more like you give them the tools. Like, they could be trying to build a house, and they're using a pickaxe to try to build the house, and all they're doing is just destroying the house every time they're trying to build it. So it's more so like, as a life coach, you're like, no, here's a hammer and some nails, use this instead to build the house instead of this other tool.
But the person first needs to make the conscious realization that using the pickaxe is not helping, and it's like ruining what they're trying to build. Because someone could easily be blinded by the fact and just keep pickaxing.
Yeah, it is like a huge acceptance part that, you know, clearly what you're doing right now is not the right thing, and you have to go get some sort of guidance to go a different route. And I feel pretty confident in trusting that the things that Kane's talking about are the correct tools to be able to, like, live this purposeful, meaningful life. It's obviously, he probably doesn't have all the answers, but
he also,
I think he's knowledgeable enough to,
he's also definitely put in a lot of work into the topics that are involved.
Yeah, and he has more experience than us, so might as well learn from someone who's done it.
Yeah,
but that does bring up a good conversation piece. When I was going through those lectures, I was thinking about the difference between therapy, counseling versus life coaching, and it's almost like counseling's more so for the people that are just looking to have, like, emotional support and just venting to get to the stabilized point, and then once they're stable, then you want to empower them through life coaching.
Yeah, so life coaching's more for someone who is already at that point of their life where, because that's the external factor. The external factor part is what hinders them from learning and changing. So they need to get past those things first and work through those before
what
they
external?
Can... What external? The thing from that dude, Gerard Egan or whatever, he wrote that book. And it talks about a bunch of different things that hinder you from learning. Whether it's like external factors. So it could be like simply distractions around you in your physical environment that are keeping you from paying attention to what's being taught. Or something in your mind that, like, if you have a bunch of ideas and things running in your head, which is the response rehearsal is what it's called, instead of just listening to what someone is saying and waiting for them to finish and then conceptualizing what they said and then forming a response, you're thinking about how you're going to respond while they're still talking.
So you're not
actually paying attention. Fully, right? You're not fully understanding what they're saying. You're just hearing what you want to hear to make up your response and say it.
Okay.
And so, like, things like that, with someone with addiction or something like that, for example, they're thinking about other things in their head while you're talking to them. So they can't fully make huge strides in their life until they're able to work past those certain thoughts, for example, as, like, an internal thing.
Sounds like a lack of understanding from the recipient's part.
Yeah. But there were some cool things, because I was very much just reflecting on how I am in general when it comes to talking to anyone. It doesn't even have to be like because they're looking for help, but just how you're perceiving people and
how maybe our perception of who needs help was wrong.
Yeah, and there's also certain things, like, for example, not being judgmental, and what was the other one?
He talks about this later on. I'm just going to bring it up now. Like, later in the course, he talks about how, like, if we perceive other people to be, like, in a negative light, so, like, oh, that person is annoying, I hate this person, blah, blah, blah. It's basically, like, a reflection of how we feel about ourselves. Because if we're secure in ourselves, then we don't even need to look outside for these external factors to find security within ourselves. So it's like,
yeah, it's almost like by saying that kind of stuff, you're justifying that you yourself are better than them.
Yeah, to when make it's yourself not, feel secure.
Yeah, when in reality, it shouldn't be like a comparison game.
Yeah.
It should be like you just perceiving the world as it is, which he said people mostly don't do.
No, it's really tough to.
People just perceive what might or might not happen in the future. Mm-hmm. And so they react accordingly. So if they think something negative is going to happen or someone's doing something negative, they react in a negative way, as opposed to just perceiving it as this person is doing something that maybe you wouldn't do yourself, mm-hmm. but you're also not, you also need to consider maybe why they're doing that. Like what other reasons are there behind it? And you need to be able to put yourself in their shoes. And not just, like, immediately, like...
Just, like, come to a higher understanding. It comes down to, I think, the more curious you are about other people, the easier it'll be for you to, like,
yeah,
get to that higher level understanding.
So, like
people are shaped by their external environment.
Yeah, so it makes it harder. So it's definitely a skill that you have to hone on and really be cognizant of when you're out in the real world, because other people are going to influence how you are reacting to situations. So if you're in a group of, say, five people, and someone over there is being obnoxious or doing something you don't like the group doesn't like, it can be easy for you to get pulled into that mentality of just being judgmental of that person and making fun of them or whatever.
Because you feel secure in yourself because you have the five people.
Yeah, you have them on your side, so you're like, oh, this is the right thing. Where instead, what you should do is remove yourself from that and basically defy the group to be on the higher level.
Find your own truth.
Just be like, I'm not gonna tell them to stop making fun of them because I'm not gonna waste my time on something that I can't control. But what I am gonna do is do what I can't control, which is not respond and try to maybe either think about, is this something that is worth me trying to figure out why that person's doing that, or just not, like, pay attention to it?
I really believe, like, the stuff that he's talking about, if you follow it, like, wholeheartedly, you'll be able to live a more purposeful, meaningful, fulfilling life.
Yeah, I feel as if having these thoughts and these principles, I guess, to bring to not only yourself, but if you want to life coach at some point, bringing it to that, just it gives everyday encounters with people more purpose than just matter of fact this is happening kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because there's more to it than just what's happening in front of you.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of cool because the everyday person probably wouldn't be thinking this way.
No.
So it's almost like
It's like a superpower.
Yeah,
it really is. Like, that's what he was saying.
Hidden meanings and,
yeah,
like, social situations.
He was saying in the beginning that this line of thinking is almost like being a detective.
Yeah.
Where, if you've ever watched Sherlock, the way he is a detective is very...
Did he bring him up?
In the beginning, yeah. If you've watched a show or any Sherlock's Home things, he's very witty and he's quick. And everyone's always like, how did you know all these things happen? It's because he's paying attention to the outer exterior of the situation, where other people are just paying attention to what's happening in front of them.
Okay.
So having this line of thinking, you broaden the picture.
It's like reading a book about Star Wars or something. Oh, no, reading the book of Star Wars and then finding other resources that follow up on the book itself. So then you come at it with a different perspective, and you just see, you read the story in just like a whole different...
Yeah, you realize mindset. Things that you wouldn't realize by taking it at face value.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why a therapist sits and has you talk to them for an hour or two the first session and just has you tell them everything. Mind. Yeah. Because they need to know, they need to understand what's going on. But I feel like in therapy, I feel like it's not there to help you to make major changes in like mindset and stuff. It's just to make you talk about your issues and talk it out to someone, essentially.
I remember going to counseling sessions, and I was scheduled to go to 6 counseling sessions, and by the 4th one, at that point, it was like probably a month and a half in. All my emotional like turmoil was lowered, and I was pretty much at baseline by the time of the 4th session. And then during the session, I just like couldn't find things that were happening wrong in my life, and basically I didn't even end up doing the last 2 sessions because of that reason. And it's like, okay, now that I'm at baseline, shouldn't you be helping me to like move forward, right?
Yeah, do and something like, positive.
Yeah, but at that point she didn't seem like she knew what she was doing, because she's mostly talking about problems.
Yeah, they're just like, I feel like their job is to problem seek, help you find a solution to the problem, the thing,
like,
and
she,
that's it.
She was like trying to find problems and stuff that didn't seem like problems. Because she was like trying to find like hidden meanings, like Freudian stuff or like that kind of stuff.
Psychology. Like picking that's why apart things that
might not even need to be picked apart.
Yeah.
I mean, we can always find reasons to complain and like problems to pick apart, right? Like, even right now, when we're emotionally sound, you can still find things to bitch about.
Of course.
But maybe that's not the point. Maybe, like, this is where life coaching should come in and actually talk about the positives.
That would be something cool to have, is an organization that does therapy for people who need it, and then
to get baseline,
through the therapy, transition them into life coaching.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Because like a lot of the times people only seek out help when they are like emotionally unstable. Just thinking about life coaching, how the best candidate that you would have would be someone that's like emotionally sound and looking to empower their life. But when people are emotionally sound, they're not looking for help. They're like, right. I got this.
Where you could take someone who's in distress, get them through it, and then maybe
empower them.
Maybe realize that their life isn't. Start that line of questioning to see where they're at in their life. And if they're happy, if they're trying to reach certain goals, what are they doing to that? And if you can identify that person maybe just needs that extra, I think that's what it is almost. Life coaching is that extra push people need to realize what they're capable of doing.
Yeah.
Right? Like getting them to get out of their comfort zone and not like fear the unknown.
I definitely think you make a really good point. Like, just being in that line of work of counseling, is all we're trying to do is like get them so they're not emotionally depressed, and then at that point it's all on them to figure out like their purpose in the world. Like, as counselors, you don't really help people find meaning in their life,
right? You're just identifying issues and trying to help them like solve the issue,
right? In more practical ways too.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the practical ways is like, okay, I'm only doing this because probation wants me to, or like, oh, I'm only doing this because if I don't do it, then all these negative things right. are gonna happen.
So,
but like showing them that if they're doing this stuff, they're getting possibilities that could enhance their life, you know. And I think through like self-awareness building and just like helping people find skills and talents that they're good at, they could see that like they are more than just a person to work the 9-to-5 to fulfill their family's needs. Like, I feel like there's a lot more to life than that. That's a personal value of mine though, so it's kind of hard to instill.
That's what's
in
hard
someone.
Is that there's a reason why his situation with that homeless guy, it made him realize that you can't just say anybody that's anybody, I'm gonna go talk to them and I'm going to be able to life coach them. Because you really can't. Because at the end of the day, that person needs to have the original mindset to want to have that happen to them. Right. In order for it to even work.
That's true. Because not a lot of people, they are into all this like self-fulfillment.
Yeah.
Trying to find the higher purpose of life. Some people are cool with like going 9 to 5, going to the church.
Yeah, that's the thing. Those people aren't open-minded to... Like, that's why he's saying, if you want to learn what it's like to talk to people who aren't open-minded, he said, go to a church. Because you literally will talk to people, and they will spend the... They will put every last bit of effort into defending their beliefs that they were taught, which is something that they were born... A lot of people are born into believing these things because they went to church from birth. So... That's all they know.
The
yeah, so they're of course they're gonna sit there and defend their beliefs in that, and not, doesn't matter what you say, they're not gonna be that open to thinking about things in a different way.
Especially if that would cause them to feel insecure in their beliefs they already have.
And I'm not saying that just because you're religious that means you couldn't get life coached, but he's saying in if you were to talk to someone about certain beliefs, if it's talking about the afterlife or anything like that, people are not open-minded to anything else.
They're too like set in stone.
Yeah, they're not even willing to consider other things.
Yeah.
So,
well, you can definitely see though, like me the other day, how I was like questioning your humanity, questioning your like existence, basically. That's basically like how it might feel for someone who's a church goer.
Right. It does. I knew what you were doing, and that's why, although I was a little frustrated only because I was in a weird mindset that day. Like,
you were already, like, unstable.
I was already just, like, a little anxietal. But, yeah, it almost feels like you're being attacked.
Yeah.
Even though you're not. Because, remember, there's no bad intentions. So, but people don't know that. So, people assume that...
Like me, you might have thought I was attacking you, but like...
I didn't, though, because I knew what you were doing. I knew, like, even though I haven't learned this thing, I knew what you were doing, and that's why I was being patient with it, but it still was bothering me.
Yeah.
But I was... In my head, I was also saying to myself, this is annoying to me to a degree, but I also feel like this will lead to something constructive if I play it out. Right. And it wasn't like you were sitting there being an ass to me or anything. You were just trying to help me think about things in a certain way. Yeah, I was just so caught up in all my thoughts that it was frustrating me. So everything you were saying was making me think too hard about everything.
Well, I think the biggest thing that was frustrating me was that you didn't have sound answers to these things that I was saying because you haven't thought about it in a while.
Yeah, that's probably what it was too. So... It was probably a mix of a lot of little things like that that just kind of were making me frustrated. But I mean, at the end of the day, we ended up working through that conversation. It did take a while, which I didn't intend for. But
and it ended up leading to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm sitting here and I'm doing a life coaching course. So, see right there, that was my willingness to be open-minded about what you were saying. And I was also being receptive because I did something. So...
Yeah, I think it's like curiosity too is a huge part.
But we already knew that though. Like that's how we are.
It's cool though getting it reaffirmed, because a lot of the stuff that he's talking about, it is stuff that we already know. But it's like we're just pulling it out of our ass through like the years of experience we've had in our life.
Right.
So it's cool hearing it from someone who's so professionally
well.
And it's like it makes us feel like we're actually doing something that's like not the right way to do it, but it's more objective.
Yeah. So now it's not you going up to someone and saying these things and having them question, well, where are you getting this from?
Right.
And having you be like, well, I just know.
At least now we'll be able to
be like, well, I literally took a course on this and I've done research on these certain topics. Like I know what I'm talking about pretty well.
Yeah. We'll be able to say that.
Exactly. People, just that alone will help people validate what you're doing and for themselves. So they know that what they're being told is something they should at least think about. Well, at least the open-minded people will think.
I've been thinking about that too lately. Is like you almost need that superficiality of like a title to get people
just to
listen.
Open the door for people.
Open the door, yeah, definitely.
It's like the key to opening the door.
Like, think about Gary Vee, for instance. Like, if he was just some, like, hack
online,
just ranting about shit, you're not gonna listen to him. But since he has, like, multi-million dollar
company. Yeah, he did something to start all of it.
Yeah, so it's almost like we're starting, like, our main mission might be, like, we want to be life coaches, but now we have to find a means to be able to life coach to a community that's receptive of it. And it's like, okay, if we have this company, we have something to show for, you know? We have actually, like, a platform for people to...
Because that, well, I mean, that one shows that we have the initiative to start something and do, like...
Finish it, yeah.
Learn the skills to do something. So we're credible professionals in the sense that we have true skills that we have to offer. That we're bringing something to life. Right. And it doesn't even have to be that we're life coaching at that point. It's just that we're doing something that's for the greater cause, and we're trying to build this community. And then once we have that, we're saying we want to implement the life coaching within the community.
And I don't think there's a lot of stuff out there. It's like we're killing two birds with one stone and just like adding a whole nother layer to the entire
fucking... Well, I mean, I can see this kind of community. I feel like a lot of people that will want to be involved in this may not necessarily be looking for life coaching.
But
per se, but we can build the life coaching ideals through our messaging in a way that it's just things that people are consuming on a daily basis within our community. So they're just thinking about that stuff on their own. Because a lot of this stuff, if I was just reading this every day, that's why I printed out this journal, because I want to just read this every day. Because by the time I'm done with the course, I'm going to just know all this shit off the top of my head. And be consciously thinking about it. So think about if you were just subconsciously doing that to people without even telling them that we're life coaching them, and see if people make epiphany moments in their life and just writing like, oh my god, like, just the stuff you're saying has really helped me in my life and blah blah blah. That would speak more volumes than us having to go one-on-one with people.
It'd be affecting more people too.
Yeah, because I mean, then people would be posting in the group about things that they're happening and.
Yeah, the one thing that I think is really cool is that we're putting this life coaching stuff to practical use. So like, we're creating a community of people that actually value building self-awareness and self-growth and self-fulfillment and like working on skills to bring value to humanity. Basically all the stuff that we stand for, we're creating a community of. And on top of that, we're going to be able to life coach people indirectly that do meet all the criteria to be life coached, which is like open availability. And they're probably, not everyone's going to be emotionally disturbed, you know, they're going to be like sound of mind, hardworking individuals.
Right, and I mean, not everyone in the community, it's not going to work on everyone, but... Think about Kevion, for example. Mm-hmm. He life coaches, but he also life coaches certain people.
Right.
So I feel like this would work where we will probably end up having individuals that want us to be a mentor, life coach type figure for them.
And we'll have like a boot camp.
And we'll have that, but we will also still be indirectly teaching life coaching material through our messaging,
and we won't have to label
without
it
telling people that that's what we're doing, and have them just take these as genuine messages and hopefully do something with it.
Even something as simple as like going on a weekend hike with a bunch of people and getting in conversation with a few people.
I mean, that right there, that's what he was saying, like what is the definition of life coaching, and he said it's a conversation with two people where you get them to step out of their comfort zone to realize who they are and what they want to do. Genuinely, who they genuinely are and what they genuinely want to do. So by helping people step out of their comfort zone to go meet new people and try these new things, that right there, I feel like, is a huge part of life coaching.
So I believe it's about setting a goal that you have no idea how you're going to get there. That's the magic of it. The magic is in not knowing exactly how you're going to get there. If you know exactly what it's going to take to reach a goal, then that's not that exciting of a goal. That's just a to-do list. You want your goal to be more of a to-be list. Who are you going to become on the destination? Who are you going to be when you cross that finish line, when you get the trophy, when you close that deal, when you land that trick? Who's that going to cause you to be? And at the end of the day, it's just about the journey anyway. One of my favorite quotes of all times from Russell Simmons in his book, Do You, he said, "Don't think that there's going to be gold at the end of the road. Instead, value the process and realize that the road has been paved with gold all along."
I feel like a lot of people want to be entrepreneurs because they think that they can just make a lot of money on their own. And they're thinking about a lifestyle and money. And they're not thinking about a bigger
They're thinking
life.
About the what.
And I feel like, yeah, that's why a lot of people fail. I think that statistic holds true, but that statistic is like a blanket statement if you don't consider the external factors. Which is, like, think of, if you just say, like, look at the statistic, 8 out of 10 people who are entrepreneurs fail within the first 10 years. Okay, why? Not just because, but like, what is it that they're doing that isn't right? And what are those other two people doing, that other 2% or 20% doing right? And it could simply be something as simple as they don't have a why, they're just doing the what.
Like, think about how many people go into business and they look at that form for business and they're like, I have to figure out the vision, the mission statement, and value propagation, whatever. And they just disregard all of it.
People are like, nah, I'm just gonna sell clothes. Like, I don't need that shit.
Yeah, and no wonder why they end up
all they do is make a bunch of clothes. They buy all the product, and then no one buys anything because no one gives a fuck.
It could be as simple as just really taking the time to fill out that paperwork to start and, like, actually following through with it.
Well, I mean, that's... That's like saying, I want to be really good at Fortnite, but I'm not going to spend the time to learn how to play Fortnite. I'm just going to go in and expect to be good. Like, of course you're going to get fucking owned. People are killing it in that game, right? So, like, you need to spend time to really figure out your strategy and what you're doing. Like, it's something as simple as that. And I feel like that's the thing, though. He said people are inherently impatient. So... And no wonder people fail at being entrepreneurs, and why only a few people are actually succeed at it, because most people can't fucking go through the steps you need to go through to get to that point.
Another good thing to bring up is, like, if you do have a good enough why, then it's gonna empower you to be, or it's gonna allow you to be able to go through a lot of struggle and crises, because if you have a good enough why, you see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You know?
I made a point. Stop letting bad things crush you. Bad things happen to everyone.
Simple.
But literally, if you play the victim card, all you're gonna do is perpetuate this cycle of letting negative things happen to you to, like, hold you back from doing something about it.
Yeah,
and instead of just taking everything, like, take it with a grain of salt, like, oh, this bad thing happened to me. Instead of saying, woe is me, be like, well, this bad thing happened to me, but bad things happen to everyone.
Right,
so,
exactly. But
like,
also,
how can I learn from this, and how can I move forward?
Also, to bring up the other idea of, like, if your why is placed in just the money valuation, then if you do have a successful company and in the first 5 years it crashes, like, yeah, that would be, if you're the sole reason why you're doing it is because of the money, then yeah, why keep continuing? Like, you just lost all the money, fuck it. Cash it in and move on, you know? Whereas, like, if your why is in other areas, like inspiring other people, that kind of thing, then even if you lose all your money, you're still living out that why, you know? Even the next day after you go bankrupt, you can go out and you'll still have the skill set to be able to inspire people if you're a life coach, you know what I mean?
I think that
that's why skill set is so important, because
that's true.
Knowledge and skill set can't be taken from you.
That's
you'll
why
always
you
have
see
it.
All these people on Facebook now, you know, these, like, people who are selling their their books, you know, millionaire habits and shit like that.
Right.
If you listen to the shit they're talking about, these are people that didn't have the mindset of a why. It was a mindset of how can I make money.
Okay.
But what they did is they had the mindset of being able to take risks and failure. So it was try and fail, try and fail, try and fail. And over that time, they built all these skills and knowledge about what works and what doesn't work. And they slowly found their way to, they didn't give up. So they, over time, they built a why of they want this lifestyle. So why, like, they developed a why over time through building their skills.
As opposed to having
the why right from the beginning. So without having the why right in the beginning, I feel like you...
So they're, like, bullshitting? They're trying to, like, make...
Yeah, they're just trying to make... They're like, hustlers, right? If this didn't work, well, let's try the next scheme. Let's try the next scheme. And over time, they end up building something that works.
It's like hitting the lottery.
Yeah. And that's then, why you and don't then, see a oh, shit ton okay. of those people on the internet. You only see, like, four or five of them. Right. Because there is only, like, four or five of them that really...
Hustled it out.
Yeah, and they made it work.
It's literally like going to the lottery every day, and then like wins, losses, and then one day you strike it big, and then you're something. Like, oh, like I had this belief that one day it'll happen, and like I was living out my true purpose.
It's all about hard work and determination. You're like, bro, you had no reason to do it other than you wanted to make a shit ton of money, which like. That's great and all, but like that's not a strong and a sustainable reason to do anything.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's like you got lucky.
I bet Donald Trump has a why to what he was doing. Like his why was probably to be like the best like real estate mogul in like the world. Like but that's a sustainable why. Like that's like a true goal to reach, not because he wanted to be a fucking millionaire, cuz he was born being a millionaire, so he didn't give a shit.
If you have big goals, money's just going to come along with it.
Yeah.
Cuz you're going to be valuable, you know? You like your skill set's going to be valuable. Your mindset's going to be valuable. Like, and with that comes money, comes fame, community.
And I mean, those dudes definitely do help. What they learned through their bullshitting actually ended up being valuable teachings, because they have they have students who have actually read their books and things and made a shit ton of money off this knowledge. But
they did it for the wrong reasons.
But I still feel like those people, their students, also don't have a why either. They're just going through the framework that those hustlers went through that worked, and they're just following along.
We'll never know. That's the interesting
thing. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go take one of those courses because I don't care to make money just to make money. When, like, if all I did was, like, become a really good real estate person and that was my life purpose, like... For me personally, that's not going to do it for me. That's not going to cut it out for me. Because I'm not really bringing... Who's going to remember me when I die? Oh, he was the greatest real estate agent in the world. Like, no one gives a shit about real estate agents after that. Like, it's a fucking house. It's an object. No one gives a shit. But, like, someone will remember someone who had these, like, real, like, you know, introspective thoughts that changed someone's life. Right? That's why Kavion is a life coach. That's why he does that, because he has a bigger picture outside of the real estate. Mm-hmm. And he can bring it into real estate to help people become successful in real estate, for example. So he cares more about helping others and less about the actual act of doing real estate, which is big. So that's why someone like him is influential and is helping other influencers become more influential.
I think that's the thing that people get wrong. Everyone says that money makes the world go round, but it's people. Money wouldn't be a thing if
without people.
Yeah.
Because, like we always say, people determine value for anything. Like, why does gold have a value to it? Because people know it's rare and they...
So how many, like, cats or dogs you see going on the street trying to sell gold? They don't give a fuck.
Yeah, because they don't know.
Exactly.
Right?
But it just goes to show that, like, Earth itself, you know, it's all objective. Doesn't give a shit. We're the only ones that have subjective values.
Because of the way our intelligence works, it just happened that way. Where we can't function without order in that sense. Because without it, then we're just like every other animal. We're just fucking running
surviving.
Around. Yeah, we're just surviving. And our intelligence is on a different level. So we realize that we could get a lot more done if we weren't just killing each other all the time. Although people still do that. But
less of it now than I would say
caveman.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. But also the population was way different than it is now. So that brings on a whole new set of issues, is that our population is continually getting bigger. So how are we going to keep people? It's going to be hard to keep people from thinking about like capitalist ideas when there's more and more people being born and bred into these ideals. Mm-hmm. So it would be big if we could make a true impact on people. If this thought process, because of the internet, if more and more people started buying into it and distributing it to people.
It basically, like, I'm trying to think of boiling this all down to one single value. Like capitalism, it all boils down to, what do you place value in? Money. With this idea,
money,
it all boils down to, what do we place value in? I think it's self-empowerment. That's the thing. It's like, we place value in, like, individual human beings, in the sense of like what they bring value to the table with, in the non-material ways.
Yeah.
And that's something that's very hard to quantify, and that's why, like,
it's invaluable.
Yeah,
we're placing value in invaluable things. Yeah. Which is,
yeah,
that's crazy, right? That's, yeah. To most people, they're like, they would, if we just talk to someone that is
like not,
doesn't
investor.
Think they would literally they would look at us and be like, you guys are fucking insane. They'd be like, you guys are stupid.
But at the end of the day, we were the ones that placed paper to be valuable.
Yeah,
like paper at one point was invaluable, and then someone thought it was a good idea to be like, oh, we can actually quantify this.
Well, when
like,
they
this
realized
the size of paper actually costs something with
design. The reason they did that is because it was more efficient to give value to a piece of paper as opposed to a metal coin,
right.
You know. So there was
a
reason
was
to it, but it
still
wasn't invaluable. Yeah, but this is like invaluable on a different level, where like it's not invaluable because it's a worthless object. But it's like, it's invaluable because everyone has their own unique thing to bring to the table. It's not something that you can just replicate in everyone.
Right.
Like, someone could be, like, Michael Jordan was, like, an awesome, dope basketball player, and everyone wants to sit here and compare Michael Jordan to LeBron. But at the end of the day, they're two very fundamentally different basketball players. Right. There's no comparison because they're not the same fucking person. It's not Michael Jordan and Michael Jordan again. It's fucking Michael Jordan and LeBron James, like... So it's invaluable. What they brought to the basketball court is completely different. And people can't see past that.
I also want to bring up a different topic, too, that's questioning that. But, like, what if you were to bring Michael Jordan, LeBron James to a whole different planet that didn't have basketball there? And they're over there, like, playing basketball, and they make a hoop on the side of the road or some shit. Like, in that world, they would just be, like, nothing.
Yeah, they would be like, right? What are these two guys doing?
Whatever. So there is, like, a sense of we do place value in things that are, like, subjective. Like, with money, for instance, it was a material object and we place value in it. Basketball, for instance, it's not a material thing. But us as humans subjectively did place value in that. You know what I mean? Like, Earth objectively doesn't have value for basketball, you know?
Right.
It's just like what brought value to us subjectively, which was entertainment, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, entertainment, and it's a way for people to get out their competitive nature without killing each other.
Yeah. Right. But there is some sort of quantification of that on our own terms. Like, at a subconscious level, I think. And, like, if we can tap into that.
Well, I feel like it's quantifiable in the sense that people look at statistics on players, for example.
Right. So, like, how can you say
how
LeBron James is more valuable than
Chris
Paul or something?
Yeah, so they're breaking it down. Oh, how many NBA championships do you have under your belt? How many MVPs do you have?
So, like,
how many
about
points
it,
have you
think
scored?
About if,
things
like the numeric system wasn't even a thing.
Right.
And, like, you can only talk about basketball players through the English language. Like, then how would you be able to quantify?
Yeah, then it would be
whoever gets a better description about themselves. It's like, and then how would you subjectively quantify that? You know, like, even numbers is, like, fulfilling this, like, capitalistic notion of, like...
Yeah, without numbers, there's nothing.
Right. It's crazy how much language plays a part in, like, how we subjectively think and how we place value in things, too.
Yeah, which is...
That's another crazy topic we could go into.
Fresh off his dream delivery of a championship, LeBron James heard criticism again, agreeing to a contract that really guarantees only one more year with the Cavs. After that, he could go for a record contract when the salary cap rises. That brought out the cynics questioning his loyalty, which made me wonder why we don't love LeBron like we love Jordan. Isn't it time we stop expecting him to be like Mike? We criticize LeBron not for what we know, but what we think we know. For instance, we think LeBron can't win without picking his teammates, but we do know they can't win without him. We think we know LeBron's biggest plan is to be a billionaire, but we know he gives millions of dollars towards educating the underprivileged, and we think he's not as good as Jordan, even as we do know he is one of the greatest of all time. So it's time, I know, to stop expecting what we think he should be and appreciate LeBron for what we know he is. At least that's what I'm gonna do.
Yo, this is off topic, but there's two stand-up shows that I want you to watch on Netflix. One of them is Trevor Noah, Afraid of the Dark.
I haven't seen it.
And the other one is Hasan Minhaj.
I haven't seen it.
Homecoming King. And
text me.
Yeah, dude. Well, first, so the reason why I'm telling you to watch these is, one, they're both foreigners.
Okay.
So, well, alright, Hasan was born in America, but he's first generation American. His family came from India. And Trevor Noah was born and raised in South Africa. So it's nice to get those perspectives about situations, and they really don't have to do with this whole mindset thing, but they're just mind openers. And it's
just seeing,
I know you don't have, like, you don't have the mindset of, like, the white American, because you were born in a different country and brought here, so you've known that your whole life, that you're not just like everyone else. Like, you've always had that perspective, so that's good.
Just seeing things differently,
yeah,
is what it comes down, like, to. Because like, I was coming from a different background, I always question, like, why America, like, why am I here, why did I get adopted, and all these other always questioning growing up. And I think that's led me to the perspective I have now.
Yeah, and I mean, you also were adopted by people who clearly are not racist people, because right. they wouldn't adopt a Korean baby if they were racist, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So having that too helps a lot. Where, not saying that I was born in a racist household, I clearly wasn't, but my parents grew up in a very different setting. I just think it's good shit to listen to. Because they...
Different angle of things.
It just makes you really think about your surroundings. And one of the big things was Trevor Noah was saying, it's great to travel, going to other countries and stuff, but he's like, I recommend to everyone, if you really want to change your perspective on life, go to a country where none of them speak English.
Right.
He's like, that will fucking make you feel like the smallest person ever. Because you realize that you're insignificant at that point. You feel like how everyone else feels when they come to America.
That's
and we
crazy.
All expect you to know That's English.
Crazy.
Yeah, we'll try going to, I don't know. What's a...
Somalia.
Like a country that literally no one speaks English. And having them expect you to know their language. Like, you'll understand real quick.
That's another crazy concept, is like the... value in just us as a human being. There's a lot of importance in just English, or like in language.
Yeah,
you know, if you can't communicate with other people, then you literally bring no value to anyone in that sense. Well, I mean, no, that's not necessarily true. Like, you could physically, like, build someone a house and not speak their language, but sharing of ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it humbles you because it takes whatever ego you have of, oh,
that's true.
People in America have this sense of like self-entitlement and importance because we're America and we're the greatest, we're the best economy in the world and everyone needs to speak English. But you go to a country where no one speaks English and you're fucking worthless to them, right? You're just another person.
And it gives you empathy to, like, when you come back to America, how you feel about foreigners.
Yeah, maybe you'll think twice the next time you make fun of someone who can't speak English that well and they're struggling through it. Like, you go try learning their language and tell me how much fun you're having. Like, and then, like, doing that while everyone's making fun of you at the same time. And making you feel like you're worthless. Yeah, right. So instead of hindering people, maybe helping and understanding would make it better for people. So that was one thing. And the other one, I mean, the other one was just a really great story. The way he put together, it was really funny. But he talked about his upbringing and stuff, and he used something that Kevin Hart did in his special or his tour. He had a digital display behind him, and he was using it to help tell his story while he was doing things.
Oh, shit.
So it wasn't just like stand up, just to stand up. Like, he had like a full like story he was telling, so it felt like I was watching a movie.
Okay.
At times, because he would give you outside reference to things to help you understand the full story, like just like that visual. It was like what he was saying, that some people are
visual,
auditory, and then kinesthetic, and that was a very kinesthetic learning.
No, that's visual. That's visual.
No, but I'm saying the whole thing together because he's telling a story.
No, and kinesthetic's learning by doing. You would have had.
Actually, oh yeah, you're right.
Visual and auditory.
So visual and
it's
auditory.
It's combining those two.
I take
two.
That back, yeah. But you can't really... Well, I mean,
there's a
part of
it where...
You could take the kinesthetic part by taking what he told and then doing, like, reflecting it into your real life afterwards.
Yeah.
So I guess it kind of covers all three, but... It was really dope. I'm excited about doing this. I'm through the first 11 videos, I guess, and there's, how many? 108 videos. So.
11 videos?
So I'm 11 in out of 108.
I think I'm at 37. Yeah, 37.
But, I mean, I could
It's not even, like, one of those things that's hard to watch, either.
No, because each time he's really building on things
like
that
fundamental
just,
truths.
It's nice.
I like how objective and black and white he is with stuff. He doesn't come off as like hippy dippy where he's like theorizing everything. And I mean, it is all theory concepts, but he doesn't.
But he's also teaching it in a way where he's reflecting his own real life experiences, putting this into action.
Yeah.
So he knows that these things are true because. That's why he was like, some people aren't going to believe the things I'm saying right away because they aren't open-minded to thinking about it. But hopefully by listening to these things, it'll open their mind to believing him. I was believing everything he was saying from the start.
Dude.
I was just like, you wouldn't be making
like reaffirming.
Yeah, I was like, you wouldn't be making this course if you like didn't know what you were talking about.
Right.
Like... Because where are you going to come up with how many hours worth of content if you're just bullshitting? Like, where are you going to get all this information from unless you actually know it's real?
That's the crazy thing about the internet, just in general, is, like, you're picking the minds of, like, fucking world-class, renowned, like, professionals in whatever discipline you're trying to learn. It's like me with coding, for instance. I'm learning from a guy who has, like, hundreds of thousands of other students that also think he's reputable. Like, you could want to be a life coach, you would want to learn how to do life coaching, and you'd go down the street in Syracuse and you'd find someone that is barely reputable, but it's the only source to be able to learn from. And so, like, without the internet, if you were to do it that way, okay, so you go to Syracuse, you learn from them, and then you'd have to fly out to New York City for the next person to learn from, and then meanwhile you just spent like thousands of dollars to get down there, and It's not accessible. It's probably just like a weekend course.
Right, it's not viable.
And it's probably not going to actually get like impacted in your brain because it's of all how like quick all it is.
Time, because the time yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, with the internet, we're literally learning how to life coach.
We jump through so many hoops, yeah. Is what I'm saying.
We're at such an advantage being like alive right now in this.
We're going directly to the source.
We're literally learning how to life coach from a guy who lives in Scotland.
Yeah.
And we live in New York.
That's just a crazy idea in general. Yeah. And people don't see they take it for granted.
And he used to live in New Zealand, like that. That guy has lived basically on the opposite side of the world, and we're learning how to do this stuff for him.
Yeah. And he's reputable. Yeah. That's what he's talking about, according to these other people.
But and I mean, he started life coaching because of his interests in education and psychology and sociology and, like, philosophy. Where, like, other people get into it because they were in the business world and they can see reason to learn that stuff for others. So there's other external factors that cause people to get into it, and they have different missions for what they want to do with it.
Which changes how they teach people.
Right, exactly.
Because his mission is...
And that's why I was saying, like, some people just tell you, like, regurgitate all this information and tell, like, try to tell you all the answers. And he's like, I don't want to tell you the answers. I just want to give you my experiences and have you consider things and try to do them yourself.
Very cool. I already feel like we're edge up too.
I think because we're like not even like timidly open-minded, we're just like, no, this is, I'm gonna benefit from this course.
Yeah. It's almost like I take everything that he says to heart and to truth, and then after the fact I start trying to analyzing it. But in the moment I don't. I just take it as like he's a science teacher and he's like telling me the truth of the world.
Yeah. But he's not even saying it in a way where it's like
hard to.
Abraham Lincoln was president in 1864 or whatever. Like, they're not just like matter of fact things. There's more to it than that.
Yeah.
They're like ways of thinking, and that's not.
Oh, it's
that's
more not deep understanding. Yeah, instead of just like
it's not just face. Yeah, it's not just like basic fact.
That's another thing is he's putting. I've been studying this lately too. The knowledge versus wisdom, and how knowledge is just knowing things for the sake of knowing.
He was saying, remember, he's like, I have friends who are really, they're like really good at like trivia and shit, and they would like, and they would be dope on a trivia show, but they have
no practical
application for any of the information that they know for the real life. So, what are they good for?
And I feel like that's kind of what school trains us to think, because of just given you're given a test and you have to complete it. And
yeah, knowledge is only power if you have an outlet to use that knowledge. In.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I could be,
but they don't teach that in the academic setting.
Yeah, I could be the smartest person at history, but not have like a real application for knowing what happened back in the 1800s. Like, oh, that's great that happened in the 1800s. All right, what are you going to do for me with that knowledge that's going to better my life? Besides just telling me something I could look up on Google.
I think they got it wrong in the sense of, like, there is levels to learning to get to the point of deep understanding. But it's almost like instead of going through all the hoops, going through level, it's like just learn everything all at once. So, like, for example, me with coding, for instance, like, I could spend the next 3 years of my life just learning the theories and concepts, everything, and then, after the fact, just try to make my own app, but instead, I'm learning the theories and concepts at the same time, like, applying it.
Yeah.
Whereas in school, they don't do it that way. They just teach you the concepts, theories, but they never give you the next part, which is the application to those theories, right?
That's why I felt like I thrived in college towards the end when I was really getting deep into the business courses, because we were already doing something that I had an application to put this to.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like I'm a better candidate for the position that I'm interviewing for, because I have real application already.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, well, he's already been doing this stuff for like other things. And it's not like, oh, I know how to do social media and stuff, but I really just have my personal account and that's it.
Right. Yeah.
Like I have three social media accounts for like three different organizations, like my personal and like two other things.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Like I'm doing shit with that particular information. But yeah, continue.
No, just to go back on you with the history idea, like you saying, oh, I know this, Abraham Lincoln died and blah, 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 blah. But no, like in terms of history specifically, like it'd be cool if like in a history course, they taught you about the future of where we're going and like how society is now, how history is now, and then taking the stuff from the past and applying it to the future, what's going to happen. That would be a cool.
Yeah, because everyone's like, oh, you're supposed to learn from the past, so, like, the history, like, so we don't, yeah, so history won't repeat itself, but they don't teach it that way, so instead...
Teach it that way, yeah.
Yeah, they should teach it that way.
Yeah. But that would change the whole dynamic of the course. You'd be more focused on, like, theorizing the possibility
of the future
instead of focusing on what actually happened.
But that's the thing. The only reason that would be a thing is because you have to take a test.
Right. Right. It's pointless. Honestly, it's pointless.
Taking tests is pointless. What? Great, you're well versed in what happened in the Renaissance era. Fucking great, dude. All right, now what? I'm like, what are you gonna do with that?
Yeah.
Probably never use that information ever again, except for a random conversation one day. Like that's the only real application where that might come up. Or if you're really passionate about it, you want to work at a museum. But how many people are doing that? Like, not that many people. Like, yeah, there's definitely a need for historians, but
it's
everyone who likes history can't become a historian. Like, there's not enough jobs for that. It's just not a realistic goal.
I think they should train people how to think through subject work material. So, like, in terms of a historian, they find a object in the ground, for instance, and they have to remember back to that time period to apply it to the present to make these, like, leap of faith in their thinking to be able to say, oh, this is what happened during the time period, why they were using it. They don't have that information. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm getting lost in my thought. But basically, instead of teaching things for what it is, they should just actually give you real world application in school so you actually can use that thinking to
direction. Yeah, I mean, that's why in high school,
exercising something.
Why I ended up becoming a business major is because the only thing I ever learned in school besides Spanish, which unfortunately I lost most of my skills at Spanish because I didn't have an application for it. The only classes I took in school that I could see a realistic application for was the business courses. Like, ooh, I'm learning how to interview and I'm learning how to make a good presentation. And like, okay, well, I'm going to need to know how to do good presentations for college. So there was an application for that. There was importance for that. I'm also going to need it for all the rest of the courses I'm taking in high school. And I'm just going to do better at them than other people because of this. Like, there were little things at first. Like, the business courses in high school definitely weren't super in-depth, but they got me thinking about how I could apply my knowledge to something. And that's what ultimately made me want to do the business courses. And I'm really glad I did because I got to do projects. It wasn't all just learning. Dude, my last semester, I didn't have any finals. I didn't have a single final test. They were all projects. Application. Taking my knowledge and applying it to something, not just taking it so I can pass a test to validate that I'm knowledgeable on something. Wild thinking, right? Imagine if high school was just, instead of the Regents exams, it was like you just did a bunch of projects.
They probably help a lot of people living in, well, I mean, going back to Myers-Briggs, we established that like 75% of people are very practical minded. So if like mad people were taking BOCES courses and like taking classes with real-world application, then I feel like a lot more kids would be doing well in school.
Because it would give you a sense of purpose for why the fuck you're going to school.
Not a lot of people are, like, adept at conceptual, theoretical thinking. And think about how many subjects we have that are that way. We have biology. We have
chemistry, science.
Any science is conceptual, theoretical thinking.
Math,
yeah, definitely. Unless you're actually in business and working with money, what do you need to know all these numbers and...
Right. That's why I was bad at math.
Functions for
because
it.
I'm not someone I. My mind doesn't work at learning something just because someone's telling me like I need to know it for this course. Because right. If I have no reason to learn it, then why am I gonna spend my energy on it? And like my mind can't get wrapped around it because I don't care enough. Like my mind just doesn't care enough to know it. Like, what would be the use of for what we're doing and like the purpose that we found and what we want to do? What would the purpose be of me knowing how to do quantum physics? Right. Literally nothing. Yeah. There's no reason why I should ever know how to do quantum physics.
Probably just like a podcast segment.
Right. Like, oh, I'm you know, by the way, like just like a fun fact, I'm also like a theoretical physicist on the side. Like, no. No one says that, because if you're going to do that, that's because you want to be a theoretical physicist. You're not trying to be a fucking life coach. It's definitely a huge lapse in what's going on in our society. And there's a huge divide between people who are on this like level of thinking and other people who are just following along with what's been done. Tradition, man. Tradition kind of fucks things up.
The thing is it still works.
It works.
It scrapes by.
That's the thing. It's.
It's just enough to be
like,
able.
It's like, for example, you have a NASCAR. You just got your first race car for NASCAR, but you're not winning right away because you need money to get better equipment, but you're scraping by and you got in because you were a good racer, so you have the basic like stock car, but everyone else has the fucking souped up cars because they've been racing and they've been, you know, making money with their sponsors and shit. So like society itself has been just going by
because it's able to get away with it,
but there's huge flaws in it and there's reasons why it's not the best it could be.
And they're so stuck in traditional thinking and just conservative value that they're not willing to take the possible risk of like destroying the education, like possibly making the wrong choice where it could lead to a path that the education system is even worse for the sake of finding improvements later on. That's the hard part is with progressive thinking.
Yeah.
Is there's a lot of... It's high risk, high reward. You know?
That's true.
So if they don't feel like there's a definite need, that change has to be in place, and there isn't right now. I mean,
I feel like the best way to change something like the education system is if
it collapses.
Well, that or saying we need to change it, and then trying to change it, and like almost guinea pig people.
Small scale,
and then if it works, build it up a little bit, and then if it still works, build it up.
Well, that's what they do. That's what they do, and that's why it takes so long for change to happen.
Yeah, because I mean, you're right. If you were just like, all right, we're gonna scrape everything that we've ever done with education, we're gonna try it this way. If it didn't work, you might fuck up a whole generation of kids in their education, which is not something you want to do.
Yeah.
So. That's huge.
It's easy for individuals to have progressive mindsets because the only one you're fucking up is yourself.
Yeah. So now that we're on this topic, with those stand-ups, you learn a lot about how systemic racism within our tradition of society in America has caused this ripple effect where it's gonna take a long time to undo what's been done. Like the redlining, for example, redlining neighborhoods where suburbs are predominantly white and not black is because the banks would give better mortgages to people who were white and not black, regardless if they were on the same standard, like same wealth standard. You could both make the same amount of money and they would give you a shittier mortgage, so you wouldn't be able to like afford to get a better house down the line just because they're black, just because of racism. Something as simple as that, and now you see how there's like clear like racial divides in like cities and just like places of dwelling, because people genuinely believe that any minorities couldn't be in the same place as that. And it's so fucked up, because what are you supposed to do about it now? I mean, you can stop doing that kind of stuff, but it still happens. Like, even now, people, there's still things in our system that are racially motivated to do certain things to benefit white people.
Well, that's the thinking, is if you're going to benefit someone else, that's to be able to get an advantage, you have to disadvantage others.
But I do see...
But I don't know if that's necessarily
I do
the
see,
truth.
I think that with the internet and things like that being, you know, a reality now, I mean, I feel like racism is always going to be there for certain people, but it's going to be less of a commonplace and more of a clear people are saying, like, you are a bigot. Like, you are not intelligent if you think that way. Because the majority of people don't think, regard other people based on their race, their race, gender, whatever, their sexuality, any of that shit, they don't regard that as being...
It all comes down to more exposure. I mean, like, think about if you lived in a neighborhood and you're the only black kid in there and there was no internet and everyone was racist to you, you'd feel like you were alone in this world.
Exactly.
You know?
But with the internet, you
it
have people to back you up, and it keeps the other people in check.
Yeah. Checks and balances.
Yeah. It's a huge checks and balance, but as long as it stays free, right? Which, that neutrality just fucking passed, so hopefully... system isn't valid.
I don't care what anyone tells you about our immigration policy. It's very difficult to get in this country. It's not like a broken condom where you're like, I'm in. You don't just... Americans hit their kids on the arm and bruise their body. Immigrants slap you across the face and bruise your soul. It's Guantanamo of the mind. We were in AP Calc together, but we had chemistry. That's basically the way our parents are. Ages 0 through 30, they're like, no girls, right? Then when you're 35, they're like, why can't you talk to girls? It's basically the way you're like, that would kill me. And my dad's from that generation, like a lot of immigrants, where he feels like if you come to this country, you're gonna endure some racism. But for me, like a lot of us, I was born here. So I actually have the audacity of equality. Like, I'm like, nah, I'm an honors gov. I have it right here. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. All men are created equal. Says it right here. I'm equal.
Definitely see that the internet is gonna end up in a payment system.
Where, well, do you understand it? Where, like, because of there's no net neutrality, individual providers can purposely slow down specific websites and things like that.
Oh, so net neutrality passed, meaning that they can't.
No, so net neutrality got repealed. So instead of the internet just being wide open, where it's like the Wild West and like it doesn't matter who your provider is, you can get access to any website, anything, and it's going to run at the same speed no matter what, now they can monetize it. So now they can say, oh, you want to be on Facebook or whatever? All right, you got to pay like $20 a month to get full service.
Which is where we come in.
Right.
We could actually like benefit from this if we have our own website. Right.
No, because it's not about a website provider, it's about internet providers. So, we're talking Spectrum, Verizon, those people control the access to the internet. Doesn't matter if
you want to hear something crazy. Oh, wait, so they repealed it? That's a definite thing?
So it already is in effect.
Whoa.
But now it's saying, alright, let's hope that none of those providers do that. And monetize.
Oh no, that's definitely gonna happen.
Because that's the reason why no one wanted it to be done, is because there is huge loopholes in the law saying like you can do that shit, but it's a matter of morality, right? Ethics
and how it's gonna look to them.
Right. So But all it's gonna take is one company to do it, and everyone's gonna do it. Because the second someone gets a leg up on someone else, oh, you know it. The one stipulation is if they're going to slow down a website and you have to pay extra to get full speed access, they have to tell you that they're doing it.
At that point, you're
so they have to literally self-incriminate themselves and say, "Hey, just so you know, we're slowing down YouTube, and you have to pay us like extra per month to get full access to it. Just so you know." So then you can be like, "Okay, fuck you, I'm gonna go over to Verizon." But then Verizon could also do it, and then you're stuck. Because then if everyone's doing it, then what?
Right. Yeah.
But see, you can see how that's a slippery slope, where they could just fuck everyone out of the internet. Because then it's gonna be only the people who can afford to get on certain sites. So that, like, this could be like a political thing if they can't handle it. Yeah, it's not okay. That's why it's scary.
And if the younger generation's not in the know, then they're just gonna grow up into thinking that this is the way it's always been.
Yeah, this is how it leads to like a suppressed knowledge of things if you let it get that way.
Yeah.
So hopefully when Donald Trump is gone, we can get new people in and put back in net neutrality, which would be amazing.
Was net neutrality in effect then?
Net neutrality's been in effect for four or five years.
Oh, okay.
So that's how we're back to where it was originally. But, you know, where the internet was 5 years ago is no one was thinking about doing that kind of shit.
Right.
But now everyone's like, oh, shit, like someone could really fuck things up without net neutrality in place. Especially in this country where
it's a policy
so,
thing.
Yeah.
It's another thing to be divided on.
It was a political stunt. Yeah. That's why they did it. It was a huge political stunt.
But just by saying two words, net neutrality, it raises questions. It
well, net neutrality made it illegal up. For companies to do that. If they did it, they would be sued by the government.
By just saying net neutrality?
No. With net neutrality in place, if a company was to purposely slow down your access to something, you couldn't do that.
Right, okay.
You would be breaking a federal law.
Okay. So another good thing to think about, too, is I was watching this TED Talk with one of the presidents of SpaceX, and she was talking about how SpaceX was trying to figure out a way to make free Wi-Fi for the entire world, basically off of like satellite system. So you won't even need an internet provider.
This is the sad case of capitalism and why people like the idea of socialistic ideas. It's because capitalism, why do you think big oil companies are still alive right now?
Right.
And it's going to take a while before they eventually get eradicated. It's because they have the big money and they're afraid of losing their power. So instead of saying, maybe I could take this power I have and use the money to invest in a new alternative, they're just like, no, fuck the environment. Like, this is working. We're literally going to make it as hard as possible for you guys to take the power from us. It's such a closed-minded thing.
Well,
instead, you can just
they literally flourish off of insecurity of other people. Because if you're so set in your ways of one way and not wanting a change, you're set in your ways because you feel secure.
Well,
Someone who is,
those people are making disgusting amounts of money, and they're playing into the whole wealth gap issue in our country, well, in the world, I should say. But with socialistic ideas, something like free Wi-Fi for everyone, no one's gonna monetize off that, right? It's just gonna be an inherent right of everyone to have free internet access.
Right. And you probably do have the technology to do something.
But all those companies that make money all the time, jobs would be displaced. Mm-hmm. So it would fuck up the job market.
So literally, Elon Musk is our hero.
True, but does the end justify the means?
Philosophical questions.
It depends. If you're doing it for the greater good of the people and you're not inherently trying to like do something to injustice people along the way.
Right, because if SpaceX
had
all
you're really
all
not
of...
injusticing people, you're just saying like, we can do this and you're not going to make money doing it, so you need to do something else. You're not telling them they can't do anything else to make money and they're just going to strip you of your livelihood. They're saying, we're doing something because this is going to benefit humanity long term. So you guys need to figure it out. Politicians can't say that to big oil companies. because big oil companies got their fucking money in their pockets. It's fucked up. That's why we gotta get money out of politics. We need Bernie Sanders, man. I sound like a socialist fuck right now. Like, people, if I was having in a room with a bunch of Republicans, my head would be gone right now. I swear to God. I love that he was, like, talking. He talked about Trump in it.
Yeah, he alludes
without taking political sides into
he's
it.
He's clearly, he's pretty liberal.
Yeah, but I would say that most liberal-minded people are just open-minded. I'm not saying Republicans or conservative people are not intelligent, but they definitely have a lot of flawed beliefs, and they're definitely not open-minded to new ideas. Conservatism, that's the whole idea of conservatism, to not be open-minded to changing things, to being like
traditional.
Yeah. That's their whole thing, which is wild to me that they were the ones that ended slavery.
Given how our world works, there probably had something to do with people would get more money. If they made slavery legal, they'd have more workers.
I'm curious to know where that transition happened.
Yeah, we'll never know. We can read about history, but...
I mean, it's not important. It's not like me learning that will help change.
Okay, so talking about history class and stuff and application, like, this would be a very good...
Oh, like a thesis.
Thesis. And that would hone in on...
thesis project. Yeah. The right side of our political world in America go from being the heroes of, the social heroes... and civil rights, like, gurus of the past to becoming the one pressing civil
change.
Rights. Yeah. Like, how does it go literally from one side to the other? Like, where did that change? Because it definitely took years, right? It happened over, like, 130 years of history in this
people
country.
Just get stuck in their ways.
Well, folks, that's all we got for you this episode. I hope we left you with some good, insightful subjects to talk about with your friends. If you want to keep the conversation going with us, feel free to direct message us, email us, whatever form of communication you want, and we will most likely answer. We'd love to hear what you all have to say about the things we're talking about and keep this conversation going. Stay tuned with our Instagram story as we will keep you updated on what's new with Boho Hobo. With the new clothes, whether it's new podcasts, anything like that. And we look forward to seeing you guys next time on Bindle Boys Podcast.